got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. You don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Break it, Glenn Cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Springer on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, welcome in to another edition of Rock Chalk Sports Talk. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, along with Daniel Courtwright. I'm Nick Springer. Another big show today here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. As always, we got some KU basketball talk. It's a double guest show, so on Tuesdays, we typically will get Matt Tate and Kevin Flaherty. Well, on Tuesday, if you tuned in here, we were airing some Free State baseball action on Tuesday afternoon. So we're going to get Matt Tate and Kevin Flaherty on the show today. Tate will be coming up in about 20 minutes from right now at 3:25. And also in the 4 o'clock hour, Kevin Flaherty will be hopping on at 4:25. Got some more KU football audio throughout the show today. Another edition of our KU football position breakdown as we continue through spring football as well, coming up later on in the show. And also, I wanted to dive a little bit, just a tiny bit, into some of the Shohei Ohtani stuff that's coming out today as well. So plenty to get to on this edition of Rock Chalk Sports Talk, as always. RCST is brought to you by 23rd Street Brewery. We'll be having updates from the Masters as well throughout the show today as well. So you'll be able to hear that here on KLWN through from Westwood One to keep you up to date on the Masters. Unfortunately, KU alum Gary Woodland was off to a bit of a rough start at the Masters last time I checked earlier this afternoon. So it's been unfortunate, but you know, we'll keep you updated on the Masters throughout the show today as well. After the show tonight, be sure to stay tuned to KLWN from 6 to 7 for High School Sports Weekly, live from Mama's Tamale Shop at 602 West 9th Street here in Lawrence, with the Free State boys tennis team coming up tonight after the show from 6 to 7. Tomorrow night, we'll have your KU football spring showcase coverage at 6:30, beginning right here on KLWN. And on Saturday and Sunday, we'll have KU baseball coverage as the Jayhawks will be hosting the University of the Pacific. That's coming up this weekend as well. Tonight also is the KU basketball banquet as well. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. And I don't know for sure, but generally, I mean, I go back to last year, and I think there was a situation where some guys had actually entered the transfer portal even before the banquet. But I just wonder if with the banquet coming up tonight, maybe there might be some more news possibly coming out about who might be departing the program, if anybody is, and so on and so forth. We may touch on that a little bit more with Matt Tate coming up as well. Okay, so we've been going through these the KU basketball player report cards. Got through the starting five. Got through Marco Jackson. Well, today I just wanted to kind of do what I am deeming the other guys, Dan. The other guys. That would be Jamari McDowell, Parker Brown, plus the walk-ons. Because I was like, you know what? I don't really want to spend too much time just talking about all those guys together. So we're just lumping them into what I'm calling the other guys. Now, I don't mean – people may think of the term the other guys and think that's like a derogatory term, a negative term. No, it's not. They're just the other guys.
Yeah, they're just the other guys. They're not the starters, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so, okay. With Parker Brown and Jamari McDowell, those are the two we'll probably talk a little bit more about here. For our KU basketball player report cards, it's been expectation, reality, grade. I think the expectation for Jamari McDowell was set early on, especially by Bill Self, that, hey, Jamari McDowell is not going to be a guy that's going to be seeing significant usage this year. He's on it was the Travis Relaford track is the direct quote, or Tyrell Reed track, I think, is what Bill Self specifically said. Basically meaning like, hey, this is a guy that we don't think is going to necessarily be somebody who might have a significant impact this year, but we view him more as a program-type player, a guy that can stick around at KU and continue to grow and you know, have a bigger impact later on in his career. So the expectation, I think, by Bill Self publicly was set fairly low for Jamari McDowell. And he only ends up averaging 1.8 points per game on the season. And again, in limited usage. The one game that he was used significantly in, if you look at the game logs, was that Tennessee game. That was when he had a career high in minutes of 27 and ended up with 7 points. And Jamar McDowell was the guy that he was not afraid to shoot the three ball. He was not afraid to chuck it up when he got in there. Down the stretch, he got some more run in some games just because of the fact that KU was so thin and dealing with so many injuries. But yeah, this is a guy that the expectations were set pretty low early on, that he was not going to be somebody who would be a major, major factor right away. Now, the immediate thought I had at the time, and I have even more now, is do players like that exist today in college basketball? What I mean by that is if you bring in a guy and you're going to basically convince him to be, hey, you're going to be a program guy. You're going to be here for a couple of years. You're not going to play very much early, but you'll have a chance to develop and become a solid player. In this era of college basketball, in the era of NIL, in the era of everything and so on and so forth, does those players even exist? And this is a real test of that because McDowell is a guy that I think potentially could end up transferring out of KU. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it's easier, especially with the transfer portal, to just pack your bags and leave. Be like, oh, hey, the smaller school, the small mid-major wants me to become their number one guy as opposed to playing for the jersey, for the name on the front of the jersey, you know, like those kind of guys, like a Tyrell Reed. When Tyrell Reed had great production, but, you know, a lot of those program guys, I don't know if there is room for that in terms of, like, how the NCAA is shaking out.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see how that shakes out, like you said, with Jamari McDowell. When you think about Parker Brown and his expectation coming in, I think Parker Brown, looking back on it, was very much a situation of, oh, crap, we went out and got Hunter Dickinson and Ernest Sude and Zubi Ejiofor transferred out, right? I think the idea was once you got Hunter Dickinson, you thought, okay, surely one of Uday or Ejiofor will be your backup big. Wrong. They both left. So then that left you with, oh, well, we got to find somebody, right? And then you end up with Parker Brown as your backup five, who was from Santa Clara, had played at Mizzou. I think was a walk-on at Mizzou, actually, to start. So certainly not somebody that you expected much in terms of production. He had a great connection with DeJuan Harris. I mean, it seemed like every game he and DeJuan Harris were getting at least one lob dunk, which that was pretty cool. But again, expectation was just play 8 to 10 minutes a game, if that, and do your best. And there were games where Parker Brown did that. There were games where it was really rough for him. And he ended up playing very little, but that was kind of his role. And then we think about the walk-ons at large, and I won't spend very much time on the walk-ons, but with the walk-ons, obviously, none of them really played that much. None of them really had much of an impact, which you don't want that to be the case in terms of on the floor. But, you know, this was a bigger walk-on group for KU, specifically because of the fact that they knew they needed extra bodies to practice with in practice. So I guess, I don't know, maybe they did their job there. I have no idea. Not in practice every day. But when you look at Parker Brown and Jamar McDowell, what kind of grade do you want to give Parker Brown and Jamar McDowell?
Well, it's tough because when you want to lump in everybody and just label them the other guys, I think the story of Kansas this year was the lack of depth that we had on the bench.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. So I think Parker Brown was a fine space filler for whenever Hunter Dickinson had to take a rest. And I think Parker Brown did a good job. He's a big guy. Did pretty okay on defense. Jamar McDowell, I had pretty high expectations for him. I thought he was going to be able to at least make an impact when he was in the game. I didn't think he was going to play a lot. But I thought while he was in there, I thought his productivity was going to be much, much higher. So in terms of a grade, if you want me to lump them all together just because of the fact that KU's bench was not deep at all, I'm floating around like a D area. And I said this yesterday. I feel mean giving out Fs and Ds and stuff
You're kind of a mean teacher.
I know. I don't know.
It's up because there was a lot of clamoring, I think, at various points throughout the season of why can't we get Jamar McDowell on the floor more? Yeah. Why not? And I think it's probably partly because Bill Self had probably already kind of decided, hey, this is the role I want Jamari to have. I don't want to give him too much, you know, to where he's overwhelmed or whatever. But, that's just kind of how it went, how things went for him throughout the season. And with Parker Brown, it's tough because, like, there were plenty of games where I think Parker Brown was fine.
Yeah.
Like, he did what you needed him to do, which was go out there and not screw it up for 3 minutes at a time.
First two games of the year, he had 10 points in each, but also that was against North Carolina Central and Manhattan. So it's tough to grade
it off
that.
There were other games where he could have been a real liability. So
true.
Yeah, it's a tough grade to give. I mean, because it's a situation where like you said, the lack of depth for Kansas was that they didn't have the bodies. So it's not so much that Parker Brown and Jamar McDowell were bad at their roles. It's just that at times they were asked to do more than probably what they could do because of the fact that you don't have anybody else. So it's not that they were inherently bad. It was just that they were being asked to do more than what they could do.
Yeah, and I guess maybe I want to rescind my degrading just because of the fact that coming in, we knew we had the scholarship situation. So we kind of maybe already expected that the bench wasn't going to be as deep as what we wanted it to be.
Sure.
And with the Artario Morris stuff, you know, we had to throw in El Marco Jackson early in the year, and El Marco certainly didn't live up to his expectations as well. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I do want to rescind it. Maybe go see, but...
Yeah, no, it's a tough conversation to have. I'd probably go like C-minus maybe, but that's our final KU basketball player report card. We're going to have Matt Tate join the show coming up next, but first, let's get to a Masters update. Welcome back into Rock Chalk Sports Talk here on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Along with Daniel Courtright, I'm Nick Springer, and we didn't get a chance to talk with Matt on Tuesday, so we're talking with him right now. It's Matt Tate of R1S1 Sports joining us here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Matt, the KU basketball banquet's coming up tonight, so it kind of, I guess, really signifies the true end of the season, right? We're done with the national championship game earlier in the week with UConn winning it. I guess right now, sort of the biggest question mark that maybe remains for KU at this point is, to me, maybe whether or not Johnny Furphy decides to ultimately go for the pros or come back to Kansas for another year. I know you kind of wrote about that on R1S1 Sports. What to you do you think is the biggest factor maybe that could determine whether or not he decides possibly to return for Kansas next season?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think that's probably number one on everyone's list. I'd be pretty surprised if Hunter doesn't come back, so I don't know that there's a whole lot of intrigue around that. Obviously, the portal still has an opportunity to produce some talent for Kansas, but you know, we don't know who that is right now, and so it's hard to have that be the most exciting or most notable thing surrounding the program. So I think you're right on the money that it is Johnny's decision that people are most closely watching, and you know, it's so hard. I mean, the kid's from Australia, so it's really hard to know. First of all, he's only been around 8 months, so we haven't really got to know him all that well to know what makes him tick. Great kid, good teammate, you know, doesn't seem to be anybody that's going to draw attention or make it about themselves. So I'm sure it's a pretty, I don't know, business-like approach here to his decision. What I wrote is more tied to the idea that, you know, because he grew up in Australia and because he probably didn't know, you know, much about Kansas basketball, if anything, most of his life. I don't know that, you know, the Rock Chalk chant and the pomp and circumstance and all the things that generally people kind of associate with what makes KU so great and why the program's so special and all that. I don't know if those things will tug on his heartstrings the way they do some players when they're faced with this kind of decision. I think it'll be very businesslike. I think, you know, is the time right for him to make the jump if his agent and family and other advisors around him decide yes, then I think he probably will. And he'll do it without really worrying about it too much. You know, there won't be any, I don't want to leave Kansas. You know, I mean, the kid came halfway across the world to play basketball. And if you're going to do that, you know, the big idea is the NBA, I think. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I think he loves KU. I think he had a great time here. I think he enjoyed his freshman season. But I just don't think that's necessarily the end-all, be-all for him by any means. Because, you know, when you think basketball on a global level, you think of the NBA. And so if he's got the opportunity to do that and they deem that it's the right time, then I think he probably will go. But, you know, that opens the door for the debate about whether he's ready or not. But how many times have we talked about KU players entering the draft and discussed how they probably aren't ready, but they still did it anyway? You know, it's just a business decision. And, you know, I think Johnny's in the ultimate win-win situation. I think if he goes, he'll be a millionaire overnight. And I think if he stays, he comes back, works on his game, gets a lot better, and probably increases – his draft stock and the money he can make if he were to enter next year. So those are two pretty darn good options. And you know, the other one about him staying is certainly I would have to think he'd feel pretty good about his starting spot being secure. I think he would feel pretty good about the work he could put in the offseason, you know, to get better, stronger, more, you know, prepared for not only the college game and what it takes to succeed here, but his career beyond this. So there's, again, win-win across the board for Johnny. And I think, if anything, that's probably what does make it kind of a hard decision. Sometimes if you have a win-lose, it's pretty easy to look at the win and pick that. But when you have win-win, I think it takes a little more time. And you know, even a guy like Devin Neal, right? He talked about his decision to come back and play one more year of football at Kansas. And he said he went back and forth all the time. And that's a kid who loved KU and grew up in Lawrence and, you know, has been a Jayhawk his entire life. And it was still back and forth, half a dozen times at least. So, you know, if it's hard for him in that circumstance, it's probably pretty hard for Johnny because it doesn't seem like he can go wrong.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, you think about Grady Dick last year. I think there were some similar conversations with Grady Dick where people were saying, hey, you have a chance to maybe come back, but he was going to be more of like a lottery pick type. But that just kind of goes along with your thought of, man, if it's a kind of a win-win situation for Johnny, maybe which direction does he go? And I think certainly with from KU's perspective, if he does decide to move on to the pros, that immediately becomes KU's number one priority is to replace him or find, you know, either in the transfer portal or whether it's like a Liam McNeely type, whatever they might try to do to fill that sort of big wing spot, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, the reality of it is with Hunter and DeJuan and KJ back, you've got those three that are returning starters. And, I mean, again, we don't know Hunter for sure, but I'm going to assume that that's the case. But there's three. And the reality is, you know, El Marco Jackson started half a season for KU. You could plug him in very easily, especially if he puts in the work this off season to, you know, improve his game and comes back a different player and a more deserving player of that starting nod. So there's an option. And then the reality is that the two guys they already have out of the portal with Riley Kugel and Zeke Mayo, they could both be starters too. You know, so I don't know that you can ever have too much talent. I definitely think that's something that's in play here, but I don't know that you have to desperately go out seeking, oh, we really need a starter, we really need a second starter, whatever it is, right? Like, you probably have enough to field a five-man lineup to start right now as it is, and if you can do better than Zeke or Riley and those guys then become sort of rotation guys or one of them drops to the bench or whatever the case is, then yeah, you do it. And if you can do it twice, you do it twice. So, I think after the way this season went, with such limited depth and so few options sitting there on the bench, I think Bill Self would love nothing more than to have 10 or 12 guys that he can look to his left on the bench and say, okay, cool, I got other guys here. I got six other guys sitting next to me that I can put in at any time. Number one, that's an option and a beautiful thing to have on game night. Number two, it's even better during the week when you're practicing and these guys are pushing each other and they're fighting for spots and all that. So I think, you know, he's talked about this, but I think you'll see you'll see a deep and loaded Kansas roster when it's all said and done.
We're talking with Matt Tate of All1S1 Sports here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Switching over to KU football as spring football starts to wrap up. The spring showcase coming up tomorrow night, which you'll be able to hear coverage of that right here on KLWN starting at 6:30. With the spring showcase coming up, Matt, I guess, do you expect that there'll be much to really glean from it, or what are your expectations for really how that might play out and if there's really anything to really take away possibly from the showcase tomorrow night?
No, I don't think there is. I mean, that doesn't mean people shouldn't go out and have fun. I think it will be fun. I think, if anything, you know, you're not looking for position battles and who's winning this job or that job or whatever. I think the two things that I would probably go into it thinking to take away most, whether I'm me or you or just a fan that's going to go watch, you're going to want to see Jalen out there. We've seen him out there, you know, during practices when we've been able to go out. So it won't be a surprise. But for the fans that haven't seen him in a long time, I think they'll be really excited to see him running around out there. And they should be because, you know, Jason Bean was so good filling in for him last year. And it's been so long now since Jalen Daniels played and played healthy that maybe we have forgotten a little bit about how good he is. He's freaking really good. So it'll be fun. I think that'll make people happy and give them a good feeling heading into the summer and the rest of the off season. And then the other thing is just that, man, like the attention that is surrounding football right now. Like, this is a legitimate football school, and people are going to be excited to go out there tomorrow night, and there's going to be buzz. And yeah, it's at a soccer stadium, so it'll feel a little weird and a little different, but even that brings a little buzz too. So I think that for fans and a fan base and people who got so used to that rut that they were in for, you know, 10, 12 years, I don't think we're past the point of, you know, getting excited about these types of things when a big football event happens and people show up and get excited about it. Like, that's still really cool, I think. And it may end up being that way for the next 5-10 years if they can keep it rolling. I just don't know that that's ever something you take for granted, especially if you're a fan base in a place like Kansas that has seen what it looks like when it disappears and seen it for a long time. So, you know, you'll see a lot of familiar faces. You'll see a lot of names you recognize. I think that should get people excited. I'm sure most people recognize that this team is returning a lot of known players and a lot of talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But going out and watching them, that should be pretty cool for people to remind them, man, we could be pretty good again next year. You know, like that. If you don't take anything else away from the spring game other than that feeling, you're right on the money, and that should be a great feeling to have.
One of the things with spring ball I've kind of noticed is that it feels like there's been some more injuries this spring for KU with maybe in past. Is there any concern on your part about that, about the health of this team right now? I mean, obviously we're, you know, months away from the start of the season, but just the fact that they're still dealing with some injuries like they are in the spring right now?
Yeah, for sure. And it doesn't matter what I think. It's what Lance Leipold thinks, and he's definitely concerned about it. So, I think that they'll probably be just very ready to get spring behind them. I think they've had a good spring. I think it's been an important spring. I mean, the you know, turning the page from that 9-4 team's been important, and there are some players from that team that were really important and played huge roles on that team that aren't around anymore. So it's good for these guys to go out there and feel what that's like to not have them. Mike Nowitzki at center, Kenny Logan at safety, Mason Fairchild at tight end, Dominic Pooney on the line, things like that. You know, I mean, that takes some getting used to. And so they've done that now. And so I think that everybody'd probably be just as well with getting this behind them now, so nobody else gets hurt. And, you know, nothing crazy yet that we're at least aware of, but you know, not good injuries, things that kept guys out for the entirety of spring once they got injured. Calvin Clements is being one. You know, that's not fun. You don't ever want that. And that's part of football and that's part of life. But yeah, I think that's, I agree with you that it's been more than most springs. And so I think they're probably ready for a little bit of a break, but overall, again, getting used to it without those mainstays. And then of course there's been a handful of new assistant coaches come into the mix. Like, you got to get used to them as well. The coaches have to get used to coaching with those guys. The players have to get used to hearing their voice. They've done all of that, and it's been a really good spring in that regard. So I think they've gained a lot from this. But you talk to any of those coaches and they'll tell you there's still a lot of work to be done, and there is. But that's what's made this program successful over the last few years, is they've never gotten complacent. They've never, you know, settled when they felt like they got anywhere. They don't feel like they're anywhere yet. I think going back to the first day of spring ball this year, when we talked to strength coach Matt Gildersleeve, he said, you know, that's been the number one thing they've talked about, because coming off of a bowl win and winning 9 games, you feel really good about yourself. And you want to feel that energy and excitement and joy, but at the same time, you don't want to get complacent off of that. So he said they emphasized that throughout their 8-week winter session. And they talked about all the time. They talked about let's not get complacent. And he was even more blunt than that. He said, what do we have to be complacent about? We haven't done anything yet. You know, we're a program that talks about wanting to compete for Big 12 titles. Well, we haven't done that. And we're a program that talks about wanting to win at the highest level. Well, we haven't done that either. So we don't really have anything to be complacent about. And those are really good words from a guy who has his hands all over this program and these players, because they often follow his lead, and they follow the lead of the head coach, and those two guys are aligned in that way. And so there's not a player out there that feels like, oh, cool, we're back. We're Kansas. We made it. We just get to cruise from here. They want to be better than they were last year, and they want the next team to be better than this year's team, and so on. So that's been a good sign for this spring too.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, you go back to the 2021-22 season, you make it to a bowl game, you go play Arkansas, but you lose. So it was like, okay, now we have to, you know, get over that hump to let's go win a bowl game. Now you've gone and done that this season, but even still, like you said, there's much more that KU wants to go out and achieve, right?
For sure. I mean, look, that's the other thing. From day one of this spring, those guys, and, you know, maybe not all of them, but I know they talk like this amongst themselves, and Kobe Bryant was very open with it. You know, he said playoffs. That's what we're chasing, playoffs. And you know, you still have to kind of get your footing and gather yourself and take a breath when you hear a Kansas football player talk like that. But that's a sign of where this program's at, and that's a sign of where the players, you know, believe it can go. And it's also a great sign that they have the right guys in there, both as coaches and as players, because that's the goal for every team. And after a really, really rough stretch there, KU in a short time is on track toward, you know, talking like that and not having it be a punchline or having people roll their eyes or laugh about it. I mean, it's a real thing that these guys are going after. And, you know, that's what normally we hear about basketball, right? Like they break the huddle most seasons and at most practices with Big 12 champs as their breakdown call. Well, this KU football team wants to be Big 12 champs too. And if they are, then, you know, the playoffs is a very real and attainable thing. And especially this year with the college football playoff expanding and all the excitement that's going to bring. So, you know, their goals are big and they should be, but their sights are set right where they need to be, which is that whole mantra of what these guys have been about since Lance Leipold got to town. And that's that 1% better every day. It's, you know, it's not get ahead of yourself. It's not think too big. It's not, you know, be too cocky or complacent or any of that. It's just keep putting in the work and good things will happen.
And you had mentioned, you know, KU does have some new assistants, especially in the coaches. And one we got to hear from today was Derelijk Paulsa. And I find that really interesting because you bring in Derelijk Paulsa, and on top of that, you mentioned Dominic Pooney and Mike Nowitzki. I mean, that offensive line is going to look probably a lot different this season. How do you get the sense, just maybe from the outside perspective, of how he's stepping in and maybe where that offensive line might be going this season?
Yeah, I like the line because it's a really good mix of a few newcomers and a really rock-solid veterans. You look at Bryce Cabledue, Michael Ford, those are two really, really good veteran guys. Kobe Baines and Logan Brown are guys that came in from other schools but have been here now too, and they're competing and right in the mix. And that's where the disappointment with Calvin Clements comes. You know, he was positioning himself to really compete and maybe even be the leader for that left tackle job, and then the injury came. So, you know, you hate to see that for him, especially a Lawrence kid from Free State High. And you know, he had such a good first year in the program. You wanted to see him take that next step, and maybe he still will. But you hate to see that happen right now. It would have been great if he could have got through a whole healthy spring and just see where he's at coming out of that. But they've got pieces there. They've got you know, enough bodies and they've got some versatility. And, you know, right now the two biggest things they're trying to do is replace that leadership that Nowitzki had for 3 years. And he was as good a leader as the program maybe has ever seen. And that certainly was true on the line from his center position, but really just for the entire team. I mean, he was a leader of 115 guys. You know, it wasn't just his five-man unit or whatever. So they're trying to do that. They're trying to replace him. And the other thing that I hear and like the most about what's happening with the offensive line right now is that Coach A, you said his name better than I do, but I'll call him Coach A. You know, he's come in and he's accepted what these guys already know and kind of met them where they're at. He's not a new guy bringing in his philosophy and this is the way we're going to do it. It's my way or the highway. You're going to learn it. You know, he said today, right, marrying the ideas of what he teaches and how he teaches it with what they already know and what they're already good at. And we talked to a few of them the other day, and all of them praised him for his open-mindedness. And it's really made them comfortable making that transition from Scott Fuchs. So there's a lot to like about what's happening there, even though there are some unknowns and there's still some positions that need to be settled and battles that will play out. There's a lot to like there, both now for this season and in years to come, too.
He is Matt Tate of R1S1 Sports. You can be sure to check out all of his coverage of KU over there at R1S1Sports.com. Matt, real quick, you got anything you want people to go be checking out over there with your coverage at R1S1 Sports?
You know, we've been doing a lot of baseball stuff lately, and I got a pretty cool video up there right now of I think it was 9 guys talking about what it was like to play in the Buck O'Neill Classic. Just, you know, Buck O'Neill's such a legend, and especially in this area. So nice video up talking to some KU guys about that. There'll be some women's hoop stuff up pretty soon. Just kind of, you know, everybody focuses on the men's transfer portal comings and goings and doings, and they should, because there's a lot of big names in there. But the KU women have a bunch of holes to fill, too, and they're going to be hitting that hard. So we'll do our best to keep an eye on that. And the coolest thing that was up was Bryce Cabledew, at least this week, you know, was talking about this makeshift bridge that they have to walk over every day to get to the visitors' locker room, which they're using this spring for their locker room. And, you know, he's tired of the bridge. They're tired of the bridge. They're ready for spring to be over. That it doesn't seem or look like much, but you hear him talk about it. It's pretty fun to dive into it. So I actually went out there after he was done talking and went back up there and walked the bridge and figured out how many steps it is and all that stuff. And, you know, you do that a few times a day, every day. You do wear yourself out, especially after practicing. So
yeah, that might be kind of tiring.
We got that up. And yeah, exactly. So kind of a fun, you know, a fun story. I mean, most of it Bryce was kidding, but he did talk about how, you know, he's proud of his guys. And Lance said the same thing, proud of these guys, because they've got a lot happening around that facility right now. And, you know, they have to just roll with all of it. So far they have.
Awesome. All right, once again, he is Matt Tate of R1S1 Sports. Be sure to check out that and more over there at R1S1Sports.com. Matt, appreciate your time as always, man. Look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Sounds good, Nick. Tuesday. We'll see you then.
Yep, Tuesday. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks.
All right, that was Matt Tate of R1S1 Sports joining us here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. We're going to get to another Masters update, then we'll have a little bit to talk about Shohei Ohtani coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Kevin Flaherty will join the show as well to talk more KU basketball and KU football and more. Got KU football audio throughout the show as well today. Coming up after the show tonight, you can check out High School Sports Weekly right here on KLWN from 6 to 7 or live over at Mama's Tamale Shop here in Lawrence. Tomorrow, as we just talked, you'll have a KU football spring showcase coverage coming up tomorrow at 6:30 as well, and a KU baseball coverage coming up throughout the weekend also, all right here on KLWN. We'll take a break for another Masters update. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, it's Nick Springer from Rock Chalk Sports Talk on KLWN. And despite sitting in a studio all day, my body feels great thanks to Massage Envy. Their total body stretch services can help you stay loose and limber and clear your mind and help your body. Their total body stretch services are completely customizable. All you have to do is sit back, relax, and breathe deep while they help you through the guided stretches. So if you've been dealing with aches and pains, be sure to check out Massage Envy on 6th Street in Lawrence and 119th and Black Bob in Olathe.
Welcome back into Rock Chalk Sports Talk. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN with Daniel Courtright. I'm Nick Springer, and we didn't get a chance to talk with Kevin Flaherty on Tuesday, so he's going to hop on the show right now with us. Kevin, welcome to the show. First off, because we didn't get a chance to talk to you on Tuesday, you know, we had talked last week about UConn and the Final Four and the national championship game, and turns out I was right, Kevin. UConn's unstoppable.
Yeah, they were unstoppable, and, you know, it was it was funny. I thought Purdue was maybe one of the teams that could stop them, but UConn had an amazing game plan. I mean, they did an unbelievable job. And, you know, C.J. Moore, who I'm pretty sure you guys have on the show, you know, every now and then, he wrote an amazing article on The Athletic about it and how UConn had basically been talking about how they were going to play Purdue at midseason, you know, which I think is pretty much unheard of, basically saying, hey, we know we're going to face this team, you know, in the title game or whatever else. We're the two best teams in the country. And so that was kind of when they started talking about it and deciding, hey, we're going to go ahead and let Donovan Klingon, you know, man up on Zach Edey and bet that they can't catch us 2 points at a time, and we're not going to let the guards beat us. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it's so funny because watching that game, you know, early on, Zach Edey, it felt like he was kind of dominating the game. I mean, he had 14 points pretty early, and you look up at the scoreboard and UConn's up five, and you're thinking, oh, man, I mean, Edey's dominating, and yet Purdue's still down.
Yeah, I thought at halftime Purdue was in major trouble. You know, it was one of those things where you kind of sit there and you feel like, okay, like Purdue's not playing bad, but Purdue's losing, and that's the problem, because then you go into the next few minutes and, you know, you hear every coach talk about the most important minutes of a game a lot of times are, you know, coming out of the halftime break. And, you know, it was one of those things where I think most people felt like, hey, if Purdue goes on a run, it kind of needs to be now if they're going to be hanging around at the end of the game. And instead, you know, Edey went on a little bit of a drought, and, you know, UConn kind of pulled away. And while Edey's numbers, you know, wound up looking great, and I'm not saying he played badly, but a lot of those points and a lot of that production came after the game was kind of already decided.
Yeah, and in classic John Calipari fashion, he decided that he wanted to make it all about himself with the headlines of leaving Kentucky and eventually going to Arkansas. Just what was kind of your reaction to that? I mean, it felt like it was the right time where it was kind of this awkward situation where it didn't seem like Kentucky wanted Cal and it didn't seem like Cal wanted Kentucky, but they couldn't really break up. But now they have this out with him going to Arkansas. What was just kind of your reaction to all that?
Yeah, it's not you, it's me, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those things. I think, you know, I covered Texas when Mack Brown kind of, I guess you would call it retired, but it was an encouraged retirement, I think. And, you know, I still remember his speech. He talked about how Daryl Royal had told him at Texas the toughest thing was to keep all the BBs in the box, basically keep everybody, all the fan base aligned and everything else. And his speech was basically, I feel like the BBs, you know, aren't all in the same box anymore. And, you know, somebody else maybe needs to come in and put the BBs in the box. And that was what Calipari basically said. And in his speech that he gave from his living room, where he said, hey, you know, my wife and I talked and, you know, we had a great time here, but we figure Kentucky needs another voice. And so, you know, and that might be the best way to put it, because Kentucky was really, really good this season. They just lost to Oakland in the NCAA tournament. And you think about, you know, all of the criticism that Kentucky caught and all the criticism that Calipari caught over the last few years and everything. It was getting to where his buyout made it to where he was almost unfireable.
Yeah.
And yet the fans were making it almost untenable for him to stay. And so in that case, it's one of those things where it's like, well, this is kind of a toxic situation and you need somebody to kind of walk away. And Calipari did that and did it in pretty nice fashion, walking over to Arkansas with all the things that you can do at that job. I think it's a heck of a job, and getting paid not quite what he was at Kentucky, but still being one of the highest paid coaches in the country. I mean, it was a pretty good deal to walk away from Kentucky and into that Arkansas spot. It was a pretty soft landing.
Yeah, and so immediately now the focus has shifted to, okay, well, who is going to take that Kentucky job? Kentucky seemingly thought they were going to get Dan Hurley. That doesn't sound like it's going to happen. There's been reports now that Scott Drew has turned down the job earlier today. I mean, where does Kentucky go from here, Kevin? I mean, what do you think is their next course of action in terms of who they might try to bring in?
Yeah, are you guys interested?
I don't know. I mean, I'd have 21,000, you know, assistant coaches every game. I don't know if I want that.
Yeah, and so it's one of those things. They're in a very interesting spot right now because I think the home run hire that everybody's thinking about is Billy Donovan, right? But you can't get Billy Donovan right now. You know, he's in the middle of his season that still has, I think the Bulls are headed to the play-in, if I remember right. And so he's still got a little bit of time. And so you don't need to rush if you're Kentucky. But at the same time, it's certainly not going to look great if you wait on Billy Donovan and you get a no, right? And there's a very real possibility. For one thing, people forget this when they just say, oh, you know, Donovan makes so much sense there. Billy Donovan left college because he didn't like recruiting. He said that in multiple interviews. And now not only would he still have to recruit, but now you have all the NIL stuff added to it too. And you look at in the NBA, the coach isn't in charge of talent acquisition at all. You can just coach basketball and get really well paid to do it. And so I think that's the question with Donovan is, does he really want to come back? But also, does he want to come back to a place like Kentucky where recruiting is almost like a second season, right? You have to win on the recruiting trail and win on the court. And so I think that a lot of that, you know, makes it an interesting thing. I think there's potential for some interesting hires in there. I know Xavier didn't have a winning record this year, but I would look at Sean Miller. You know, the whole reason that he got let go at Arizona isn't applicable anymore. And he's a guy that has coached at a high level at a major school before, which you're not usually going to find. Maybe Mick Cronin would be another one of those guys. But yeah, I mean, Scott Drew was a guy that I think a lot of people felt was a layup for Kentucky. And it was a layup that, you know, like when Drake tried to get in the layup line at Kentucky and just totally screwed it up, you know, they weren't able to get across the finish line with it. Hurley was always going to be a long shot. I mean, it was, Hurley is probably very grateful for the calls and everything, and his agent is as well, but you know, that was an extreme long shot. I don't blame them for making that call, but, you know, the idea that he would leave a spot where he's just won two national titles for a boilerplate, you know, and is happy doing so for a, you know, a place like Kentucky, you know, hopping from the frying pan into the fire, you know, would be a pretty wild move. But yeah, they've got some directions to go now if they don't wait on Billy Donovan, but you know, waiting on Billy Donovan may be their only real way to quote unquote win the press conference.
Yeah, and something I'm curious about, just kind of as this relates to KU, you know, you look around at some of the other blue blood schools right now, and Duke has John Shire, North Carolina's got Hubert Davis, Kentucky's going to be making this hire. To me, it looks like after Kentucky makes this hire, the next blue blood really that's probably going to be needing to hire a new coach may very well be Kansas, right, in the next 6 to 8 years or so. So I'm just kind of curious how this plays out. I mean, I don't know. Do you think there's anything as this plays out, you think, okay, well, maybe that's applicable to maybe whenever Kansas might have to hire their next head coach?
You know, Kansas is doing such an unbelievable job in the NIL space right now. And, you know, when you talk to coaches about, hey, what are the biggest factors right now, whether it's football or basketball, that's a huge factor because everybody wants to have that ability to go out and acquire talent, especially in the transfer portal. And I think that Kansas's standing in NIL really helps. I think the facilities that Kansas has really helps. You know, it's going to be tough for whoever follows Bill Self, not just because he's won a lot of games, but because he's won so consistently. I mean, it's unheard of for a team to be a top four seed every single year that you're there for over 20 years. That just doesn't happen where a coach doesn't even have a real down year. And I know people will look at this year and say, oh, it was a down year this year. It's a down year where you beat, you know, you beat multiple, you know, teams that probably would have gone to the Elite Eight when you look at Houston, you know, and the injury that they had and everything. You beat Tennessee, you beat the national champion, you wind up getting a top four seed and everything else, and you had all these injuries. That's not a down year. A down year is missing the tournament entirely, and Self hasn't come anywhere close to that. And I think that's where things are going to get really tricky for the next guy, is convincing somebody to come in to a spot where Kansas hasn't missed the NCAA tournament since it went on probation in 1989. And so you're basically saying to that next guy, the expectation here is that you don't lose ever, you know, in terms of you don't have a bad season. And I think that's going to be the tricky thing for Kansas. At Kentucky, you know, they don't want to lose, and they want to be a national title year in and year out like Kansas has, but Kansas just hasn't lost. And I think that's going to be maybe some of the tough part about, you know, trying to lure the correct candidate or whatever else at that point. But I will say this, you know, if Travis Goff is still the athletic director at that point, and you look at his hires across the different sports from Lance Leipold to, you know, new baseball coach, all of those different things, you know, you would feel like you had pretty good faith in him to get that job done. Whereas I know Mitch Barnhart is kind of a polarizing character right now in Lexington.
Hey, Kevin, Dan Court right here, a new co-host of Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Nice to meet you, by the way. Real quick, so staying on KU basketball, with all the rumblings going on about Johnny Furphy as to what he's going to do, that's kind of up in the air. What do you think KU's course of action is going to be in the transfer portal if Johnny Furphy leaves?
Yeah, I think one of the things that you do is you go into the portal looking for a big wing regardless and basically saying, hey, you know, this guy, he's either somebody that we can play alongside Johnny Furphy, or he's somebody that we could potentially play with Johnny Furphy in different lineups and things like that. And so I would look for a guy who's going to be a potential 3-4, you know, somebody that can play the wing but could also play sort of that fourth guard spot around Hunter Dickinson. And so I think you have to prepare for it. And you have to go get that guy just in case. Obviously, best case scenario is Furphy returns, in no small part because we've seen that guys who return under Bill Self tend to get better. And so Johnny Furphy would be a guy, he had a really nice year, but he would also be a candidate to be a breakout candidate next year, you know, as somebody who could wind up taking that next step forward in his game. But you do have to give yourself some cover. You can't just depend on him coming back and then wind up, you know, with holding the bag when he goes pro and you don't have somebody to replace him at that spot. I expect Kansas to look for multiple wings still in the portal, and I would expect one of those wings to be, you know, a little bit taller, bigger guy that could potentially play those 3-4 spots the way that Johnny Furphy would.
We're talking with Kevin Flaherty here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Switching over real quick to KU football. Spring showcase coming up tomorrow night. Kevin, so far this spring for Kansas, to me, one of the things that really jumped out to me over the past week is some of the discussion around KU's offensive line. You brought in Shane Bumgardner as a transfer from Tiffin University who seemed like he was going to become that starter for KU at the center spot. Lance Leipold made a comment earlier in the week that saying that it was more of a battle. Do you have any levels of concern right now about the offensive line for Kansas and maybe how that might play out as we head into the rest of spring and then into the summer and fall camp?
No, I think that they can get cover at the center spot, whether that winds up being, you know, even if you feel like you have to bump Michael Ford down, you know, that's a guy who's got a lot of experience and you could potentially do that with the guard talent that you have in the program. And that's even, you know, sort of, I don't want to say a worst case scenario, but that's there, you know, to pull it in case you need of emergency. One of the really good things about this spring on the offensive line has been there's been a lot of praise about Logan Brown. And he was a guy that, you know, they brought in last year, was a former 5-star prospect, you know, started at Wisconsin and then wound up coming to Kansas and was injured. So he might have been a starter on last year's team as an offensive lineman. He was injured. He didn't play at all, but he's been really impressive in the spring and he's at, you know, at that left tackle spot. And so replacing Dominic Pooney is never going to be easy. You know, it seems like every time somebody talks about him now, it's about how his draft stock is rising. But at the same time, Brown is a really talented guy, and I think, you know, him being healthy and him playing the way that he has maybe lended a little bit more stability to that tackle group. Calvin Clements is going to come back, you know, from injury here before too long, I would say. And then, you know, obviously bringing back a starter at that right tackle spot, you know, you're looking good at the tackles. I think they have enough guys on the interior. It's just a question of, hey, is this group going to come together from a chemistry standpoint? Are they going to be able to figure that part out in enough time to where the five guys all get a lot of practice together?
On the flip side, on the D-line, you look at that situation for Kansas, and it's funny, Kevin, because you rewind back to about a year ago around the same time, and the question was, oh my gosh, no Lonnie Phelps. What's Kansas going to do? How are they going to replace it? And here comes Austin Booker that strolls in and ends up being just as good, if not better, in terms of production than Lonnie Phelps was. And it's funny because Taiwan Otulu, the D-line's coach, mentioned, hey, you know, because of that, we feel good that we can maybe do that again. When you look at this D-line room for Kansas, is there anybody on your mind that you think maybe breaks out that can become that Austin Booker? Or do you think maybe KU might need to go out in the transfer portal and still add somebody? How are you feeling about KU's pass rush at this point in time?
Yeah, I mean, you hope that Dylan Brooks can come back, that it's not a super long-term injury. Jeremy Robinson should be just fine. And Robinson's an interesting guy in that I still think he has upside. You know, last year, Austin Booker wound up being the All-Big 12 guy, but don't forget that heading into the year, a lot of us thought that Robinson had that potential and thought that he was maybe going to be the more solid part of that group. With him being back, you know, one of the best things that could happen for Kansas would be Robinson taking a step forward. You know, they went out and got Dylan Luedtke, who's going to kind of plug into that group and give them some depth. I think they're still probably going to go into the portal and look for another guy. The problem is that everybody's looking for defensive linemen in the portal. That's going to be one of the most recruited positions in the portal. And so if they can find somebody who has legitimate starter potential, who can either win that spot opposite Robinson or, you know, wind up pushing Brooks and essentially giving them two starters at that position, that would really help them out a lot, because I think this defensive tackle group has a chance to be really good. And when you look at Tommy Dunn and DJ Withers, I do think, you know, depth-wise, they could stand to continue to develop guys there. But, yeah, I think the defensive line, if they can figure out that end spot opposite Robinson, again, like you said, something we said last year and it worked out pretty well, you know, they have a chance to be pretty good on that defensive line.
Yeah, and I'm just curious, maybe, I don't know if you have a pulse on this or not, but really just from a standpoint of the transfer portal in the spring for football, I mean, what is your expectation? Do you think, just maybe not even just specifically at Kansas, but nationwide, there will be a lot of players in the portal, there'll be a lot of opportunities, or I don't know, how do you think it might play out?
Yeah, I think it is going to be kind of a wild portal session, if you will. I do think there's going to be quite a few players in there, and to be quite frank, that's one of the areas where the staff has done such a good job is – you know, they recruited guys that wound up being, you know, the portal guys that everybody won. I'm blanking on his name. The defensive end for Florida State this past year was a guy that
Jared Verse.
Yeah, Jared Verse was a guy KU was on really early, and he just exploded, and he was not going to go to Kansas. You know, with all of the different offers that came out of that, and you look at it, you know, once they went a little bit down the line and everything, you look at Austin Booker, you look at Lonnie Phelps, like they've done a really good job of evaluating guys who are either coming from other Power Five schools and maybe didn't get that opportunity, or guys who really did produce at a lower level. And I think they've scouted those guys really well. And so that's kind of their place in this, I think. There's going to be some power guys. One of the defensive ends from Texas, Christopher Ross, went into the portal. You know, Bear Alexander, everybody thought for a minute he was entering the portal from USC, but he says he's not as a defensive tackle. Those guys, if or when they do enter the portal, you know, they're going to have everybody all over them. I think where Kansas kind of mops up is the way that they evaluate kind of that next level. And so it is going to be, I think, a crazy portal session. And teams are going to have a really good idea coming out of the spring where their holes are.
He is Kevin Flaherty. You can check out more of his great analysis online on social media at Kevin Flaherty FA. Kevin, appreciate your time as always, man. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, that was Kevin Flaherty once again joining us here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. We're going to get to another Masters update, then we'll have more KU football audio and more KU football talk coming up in the 5 o'clock hour as well. Don't forget High School Sports Weekly coming up tonight after the show at 6 o'clock here on KLWN. Plus, the Spring Showcase coming up tomorrow. You can hear that as well right here on KLWN with 6:30 coverage. Masters update right now. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. 5 o'clock hour here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Along with Daniel Courtright, I'm Nick Springer. Coming up after the show tonight, we'll have High School Sports Weekly from 6 to 7 at Mama's Tamale Shop here in Lawrence. So you can listen on KLWN. Or if you want to go check them out live at the at Mama's Tamale Shop at 602 West 9th Street, you can. We'll have a live speaker out there for you to listen and enjoy some delicious, authentic Mexican food at Mama's Tamale Shop tonight, 6 to 7, coming up after the show. If you missed anything from today, earlier in the show today, you can check that out on the Best of RCSD podcast, anywhere you get your podcasts, including at kusports.com. Presented by Massage Envy. Coming up tomorrow night, we'll have your KU football coverage of the Spring Showcase as Kansas football wraps up its spring football season. Ryan Haney will be on the call of that. I'm sure it'll be a fun broadcast, so tune into that at 6:30 tomorrow night for coverage of the Spring Showcase. Coming up this weekend on Saturday and Sunday, we'll have KU baseball back on our airwaves as Kansas taking on University of the Pacific. It's a non-conference series for KU. Is because in the Big 12, they have an uneven number of Big 12 teams in baseball. So they have a non-conference series coming up against the University of Pacific this weekend. Saturday and Sunday, we'll have coverage here on KLWN. All right, let's wrap up our position breakdowns of the offense. We've gone through quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. Now we get to the offensive line. And actually, I had a chance to hear from Coach Daryl Ekpalsa earlier today. We'll get to that audio probably on tomorrow's show. Of some of more of what he had to say. And, of course, Kansas has a new offensive line coach with Daryl Ekpalsa hired in after the departure of Scott Fuchs. And this is an offensive line group that you felt really good about in previous years because of some of the veterans they had. You think about a guy like Dominic Pooney, Mike Nowitzki, guys that have been around. But this year, there's some real question marks for KU around this position group. Let's start with the tackles. Right now, it's looking as if KU is going to be rolling out Logan Brown and Bryce Cabledew as the tackles, but no Calvin Clements either after he suffered an injury and seems like he's going to be out for the spring, so that kind of set him back. He seemed like a guy that was going to be in the discussion as being somebody that could really fight for a spot, but seems like probably Logan Brown and Bryce Cable do. And, Dan, when you think about Logan Brown, he's a bit of an unproven commodity for KU. Had some success at Wisconsin, played left tackle at Wisconsin, but now has been in KU and hasn't really been able to play that much. He's been dealing with injuries, so he's a bit of an unproven position there at the left tackle. And you have a guy like Jalen Daniels, you want to protect his blind side, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Our right tackle is going to be the biggest part of that offensive line. But Logan Brown, Coach Ekpalsa mentioned it in his interview today. Logan Brown was the last guy out the field because he asked him after the game, after practice, he said, hey, what are some things that I could work on? And so he got some work in after practice. We saw him leaving. There's nobody else out there on the field. So that's it. Yeah, he's unproven, but obviously he has that drive in him in order to be a successful offensive tackle.
Yeah, and he was a highly rated transfer as well from Wisconsin coming to KU. And then with Bryce Cabledew, you feel like you're going to get some consistent play there. He was dealing with injury down the stretch towards the end of the season and dealt with a little bit early in the offseason. But he's another guy, had some of his audio earlier in the show today, that is somebody you can really rely on, I think. And Ekpalsa kind of highlighted him as being that guy that he's seen it all. And it makes sense because Cabledew has been playing a lot of college football. So you feel pretty good about him at right tackle. With Logan Brown at left tackle, we'll see. And obviously with Calvin Clements, you know, you felt like maybe that was a guy that could compete, but not anymore due to that injury. So seems like maybe at this point it would be Logan Brown. When you look more towards the guards and the interior of the offensive line, that is where some of the more interesting discussion starts to happen, because I touched on this with Henry Greenstein and even with Matt Tate earlier in the show about this idea of, okay, Shane Bumgardner is a D2 transfer from Tiffin University, and he was an All-American, won the what would be the equivalent of the Remington Award for the best center in D2 college football. You bring him in as a transfer, and the general thought was, okay, boom, you have found your center for this upcoming season. Well, then some comments from Lance Leipold didn't really make it seem like that was the case. So now I think there is some real question marks. I don't know. It's a bit of a tough situation because if Shane Bumgardner is not your center, not your starting center, you feel like you almost maybe wasted that transfer in some ways because you brought him in to be the starter, and if he's not good enough to win that job, that would be a bit concerning, I think.
Well, I think it's not. I think it's good to have a little pressure put on you coming from a D2. You know,
that is
winning that big award. The equivalent to the Remington Award, in D2.
Yeah, I don't
winning
exactly
that award, you know, he was on top. He was sort of a big fish in a small pond, and coming here to Kansas, I think it's going to add pressure to him. But hopefully, he can sort of strive under that pressure. Of you know, there is competition here. There are bigger guys here, bigger guys on the defensive line. So that's going to be good for him, I think, in the long run.
Sorry to cut you off. Coincidentally, it's the Remington Award at the top center of the D2 too. So
look at that.
Look at that in 2023.
So, yeah, I mean, to your point, you know, we got some Shane Bumgarner audio coming up actually later on this hour, and he said, hey, at Tiffin University, there was 8 buildings total, like, for the whole school. KU football has, you know, they're building they're building a new stadium. They've got the sprawling Anderson Family Football Complex. I mean, yeah, it's certainly a big difference for him, and just in terms of not only the step up in competition, but just the step up in terms of facilities, in terms of everything that he's working with, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it is a big adjustment. And the question is he capable of stepping up into that? And, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we were too quick to sort of just crown him as being that starting center for KU, but I think that was kind of the general thought, is that he would be able to step into that role. But if not, there are some questions, because then you look at the guard rotation for Kansas and what they have. You have a guy like a Michael Ford. You have a guy like Kobe Baines. You have a guy like a Daryl Simmons, who was brought up by both Lance Leipold and actually Daryl Paulson, the offensive line coach as well. Dre Dorian is also probably in that conversation a little bit. So you have some competition there at the guard position, but the problem for me is, like, gosh, if you have to move Michael Ford to center, then all of a sudden you're thinking, okay, well, is Shane Bumgarner getting much work outside of the center position? Admittedly, Daryl Paulson was kind of asked that point blank today, and he didn't really give an answer. He kind of gave a non-answer, and I'm sure, obviously, because that's probably a conversation that they want to have internally about where they might pivot if that ends up being the case. But it is something that I find fascinating, because then you do have that question of, okay, if Ford is going to your center position, and Lance Leipold has talked about this. Lance Leipold, in fact, he talked about it earlier in the week when he had his audio, of this idea of, okay, if you have your starting five and then you have your next, you know, 4 offensive linemen, but your 9th best offensive lineman is only playing one position, to where your fifth guy goes down and it's like the 9th is the backup, but you'd rather have your 6th out there, right? Well, with Shane Bumgarner, if he ends up being that 6th guy, but he can only play the center position, then you're starting to go further down. So I do have some concerns there, because I think Michael Ford is a really, really quality player, and I think Kobe Baines is a quality player as well. And the question just becomes, how do those guys fit in if one of them has to, if, like, Ford, for example, seemingly has to go play center? Bryce Cable even mentioned that he had, like, they wanted to use him at center a little bit. So I don't know. I have a lot more concerns now than I did maybe even last week about the offensive line, from the standpoint of, gosh, if Shane Bumgarner is not going to be your starter at center, that could ruffle up that could cause some problems in terms of what the rest of the offensive line looks like. So I have some real concerns about that.
Yeah, and I think you made an interesting point about if Bumgarner can only play the center position, then he moves farther down the list. Because that is obviously such a huge part of being an offensive lineman, is, you know, you should learn all those different things. If Shane Bumgarner, I don't know how tall he is, but if he's not tall enough to play left tackle or right tackle.
He's listed at 6'3", but okay. When we talk to him, listen, I'm like 5'9"-ish maybe. There's no way that guy was more than 2 or 3 inches taller than me.
Oh, well, sure.
So he's probably like 6 foot, right? Maybe, I don't know.
I mean, but a lot of people out there, they might think, oh, you're just an offensive lineman, go out there and just block somebody. But the different techniques, different responsibilities. So yeah, it is tough to be able to learn that. I think it's a good quality to have as an offensive lineman, but at the same time, yeah, it could be tough. So yeah, that is something that is concerning as well, considering that, you know, you have one of the best running backs in the backfield in the Big 12, and you have one of the best quarterbacks in the backfield in the Big 12.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've talked about this, but, you know, you feel great about KU skill position players, but if your offensive line is struggling or not up to snuff, that could unravel a lot of things if you're KU. So that is my concern. And I think it's interesting, you know, Scott Fuchs, the previous offensive line coach for KU, was, and I think Lance Leipold too, had a big emphasis on that cross training of making sure you can play different positions on the offensive line. I don't get the sense that that is as much of an emphasis from Daryl Paulson. Just from the outside looking in, I don't get the sense that that's quite the same way. So that leads me to believe, okay, maybe there is more of a conversation of, hey, listen, last year we did have the depth of guys to where we could play, we could cross-train, but this year maybe our top five, there's a gap, so we need to find a way to make sure we get those guys locked into the same positions. I thought Bryce Cabledew had some interesting comments about that. So I do think that that's something to keep an eye on, is that cross-training being implemented as much under Daryl Paulson as we've seen previously? And I think Daryl Paulson is a fantastic coach, and he said today, you know, that he's open-minded. He takes advice from some of the veteran guys, which I think is something that's really cool. Jeff Grimes, obviously, I think factors in as well with the type of offense that he wants to run. So you've got a lot of new moving pieces coming in here that it's just a little bit curious how they're going to totally fit together through the rest of spring and then into fall camp as well. Because, again, I think
I would feel way better if I knew, if I felt that Shane Bumgarner was for sure going to be your starting center. I think that answers a lot of questions that you have, but it doesn't really seem like that's the case. Lance Leipold called it a competition earlier in the week, so I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. But that's our KU position breakdown for the offensive line. And we'll get into the defense now coming up as we get through the rest of spring ball here, and we'll have more time in the spring to talk more defense as well. But that's it for the offense. That's everything for the offense. So we'll get to our RCST replay coming up next with Matt Tate, in case you missed it earlier in the show. Coming up on the other side, we got some more audio from Shane Bumgarner coming up later on in the show as well. That's all coming up, but first we have another Masters update for you here, and then we'll get into our RCST replay with Matt Tate, if you missed that earlier in the show.
Well, that's it here on the podcast side, here on the Best of RCST podcast. Thanks so much for listening in. And of course, if you do want to hear the full show, you can listen every day, 3 to 6, Monday through Friday, for Rock Chalk Sports Talk, your only daily KU-centric sports radio show that you'll find every day from 3 to 6 on KLWN. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Thanks so much for listening to the Best of RCST podcast presented by Massage Envy. You can also find us on kusports.com as well. Be sure to check out the live show every day from 3 to 6 on KLWN. Thanks for listening.